All right, let's dive in. Today, we're going to tackle something pretty meaty.
Yeah. We're looking at self-interest
And how it really impacts modern society.
in all sorts of ways, ethically,
Think about it.
social media,
Inequality.
environmental crisis.
I mean, are these things connected?
I think so.
And our mission today is to really trace this whole idea of self-interest back to the start. I mean, it was controversial.
Right. It was scandalous, like really scandalous.
Yeah, and to see how it kind of evolved to where we are now. And I'm kind of interested in this thing. I've heard you mention it before, the perverse social dynamic.
So to start with, we got to go way back to a guy named Bernard Mandeville,
Okay.
wrote this book, Fable of the Bees,
Okay.
18th century. And he basically argued that private vices, like greed and selfishness, they can actually lead to public benefits.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's like that's pretty counterintuitive. So how did he justify that? I mean, was he just trying to stir the pot?
Well, I mean, one of the examples he gives is this corrupt judge.
Right.
And the corrupt judge, by being corrupt, actually stimulates the economy.
I'm really curious. How does a corrupt judge stimulate the economy?
Well, so he's taking bribes, right? He's accumulating all this wealth. And then, what's he doing with this wealth?
Yeah.
He's spending it. He's building a lavish house. He's hiring people to decorate it. He's buying fancy clothes, commissioning artwork, and all of that creates jobs, right?
Oh, okay. So it's like this unintended consequence.
Unintended consequence.
Yeah.
And this is a big idea because what he's saying is even though the behavior is unethical, it can have positive knock-on effects. And this is like the seed of a lot of modern economic thought.
That's pretty amazing to think that, this idea that was condemned back then. I mean, you said they burned his book,
Oh,
right?
yeah, they hated it.
And now it's kind of like this cornerstone of our economic system.
It really is. It's so interesting how ideas evolve.
So, okay. So he identified this economic benefit, but I mean, didn't he also recognize that there was a problem with this or like a dilemma?
A moral dilemma, yeah, big time.
Yeah, what was that?
Well, he realized that while people might be indulging in these private vices, they also feel guilty about it, right?
Oh, okay. So there's this tension
There's tension.
between like getting what you want, but also feeling like maybe you shouldn't be getting what you want.
Exactly. And actually, this tension is played out in the Fable of the Bees.
Okay, the bees. So how do they play into this?
So in the fable, when the bees decide to become totally honest, like ditch all their vices,
Okay.
the whole hive collapses.
Oh, wow.
So it's like he's suggesting that a certain amount of dishonesty is actually necessary for a functioning society.
Okay, so that's pretty dark.
It's a little bleak, yeah.
Yeah. But it makes you wonder, I mean, if that's true, where's the line? I mean, how do you know when self-interest is good and when it's bad?
That's a really good question. And I mean, it's something to think about in your own life, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever felt that?
Oh, absolutely.
Where you're like, yeah, I want this, feel bad about it.
Yeah. All the time. Okay, so this idea of vice, I mean, it wasn't exactly a popular concept. How did it become more acceptable to society?
Well, that's where Adam Smith comes in, who's often considered the father of modern economics. And he really sort of softened Mandeville's view. So instead of talking about vice, he talked about self-love.
Ah, okay, so it's kind of like a rebranding,
Yeah,
a little PR.
exactly.
But at the core, it's the same idea, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that's what I find so fascinating is that this idea that was so taboo, now it's like it's basically how our world works.
Right, it's incredible.
Yeah. So where did things go from there?
From Smith, I think the next big chapter is the rise of neoliberalism.
Okay, and I hear that word a lot.
Yeah.
Can you just break that down for us? Like, what does that actually mean?
so essentially it's about minimizing government intervention in the economy. So free markets, deregulation, privatization.
So it's like taking those ideas from Smith and just going like full speed ahead.
Yeah, and a big influencer here was the Chicago School of Economics. They
Yeah.
had a huge impact on economic policies around the world.
And I mean, I've seen their ideas reflected in a lot of political
Oh
leaders.
yeah.
Yeah, and I imagine that all of that had consequences.
Absolutely. I mean, some people argue that it led to economic growth, but there's also, you know, the downsides.
Yeah.
Inequality, social unrest, environmental damage.
Yeah, okay. So we've gone from this kind of scandalous fable to this global shift in economic thinking. But how does all of this connect to, like, how we live our lives today? I mean, it can't just be about economics.
No, it's definitely not just economics. And this is where Danny Robert Dufour's work gets really interesting. He's a contemporary philosopher, and he argues that the morality of screw your neighbor has become more and more overt.
Okay, so that's a pretty strong statement. What makes him say that?
Well, he points to, you know, figures like Trump, for example.
Okay.
His America First approach was very much about pursuing self-interest, often at the expense of others.
And we see that kind of thing happening in other parts of the world, too.
Oh, absolutely. Dufour also talks about, you know, the president of Argentina.
Okay.
Who openly embraces a very aggressive neoliberal stance.
So it's almost like Mandeville's ideas on, like, steroids.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah. But why? Like, why has it shifted from kind of like a more, I don't know, more restrained self-interest to this screw your neighbor thing?
Well, Dufour suggests that it's actually a change in the very structure of our morality. Remember Freud's idea of the superego?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
little voice in your head that tells you right from wrong?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, he says that's been transformed into what he calls a ferocious and obscene superego.
Whoa, okay, so it's like the superego went rogue.
It went rogue. So oh, instead of it being about restraint or guilt, it's now pushing people to exploit others before they get exploited themselves.
Oh, wow. That's pretty scary. And it almost feels like, you know, especially with social media, that just kind of amplifies all of this.
Oh, absolutely. Dufour sees social media as a major driver of this.
It's all about likes and followers and, you know, yeah. getting attention. And a lot of that, it seems like, is driven by that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
So we've got neoliberal ideology, changing social norms and technology. How does all of that connect to inequality?
Well, this is where Herbert Spencer comes in. His idea of social Darwinism.
Social Darwinism.
Yeah, which is taking Darwin's theory of evolution and applying it to society.
And that's been used to justify all sorts of terrible things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the idea that competition and survival of the fittest are natural and necessary.
So it's like survival of the fittest equals inequality.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, I feel like that's so insidious because it can creep into your thinking without even realizing it.
Absolutely. And Dufour actually points to some modern examples that are really disturbing. Like, he even quotes the French president, Macron, who said, "Among men, there are carnivores and there are herbivores. The role of the herbivores is to be eaten by the carnivores."
Wait, did he actually say that?
He did, yeah. What? Yeah, which is a pretty stark example of how this kind of social Darwinist thinking can permeate even seemingly progressive circles.
Right, because it's this idea that some people are just meant to win.
Exactly.
And other people are meant to lose.
Right.
Yeah, and how often do we see that kind of thinking, like, in everyday life?
All the time.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, just in the stories we tell, you know, the stories of winners and losers, you know, the kind of glorification of ruthlessness.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah. So, okay, we've got Mandeville, we've got Smith, we've got neoliberalism, social media, social Darwinism. Like, how does Dufour tie all of this together?
So he introduces this concept called the perverse social dynamic. Mm-hmm. Which is essentially where individuals who have basically thrown off any kind of moral constraint can exploit those who are still struggling with those things.
Oh, okay. So the system actually rewards people who are willing to, like, just, you know, be ruthless.
Exactly. And he argues that this is playing out on a societal level, leading to increased polarization, you know, like the breakdown of that feeling of shared humanity.
Right.
And he also links this to, you know, the rising rates of anxiety, depression, substance abuse.
Right, because we're all trying to kind of cope with this system.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's I mean, it's a pretty bleak picture so far.
It's not great.
Yeah, but are there any signs of hope? Like, what can we do?
Well, Dufour does offer some solutions, but they require a real shift in thinking.
Okay. I'm ready. What does he suggest?
So he talks about the need for resubjectivation and resymbolization.
So I remember those words from before.
Yeah.
Can you just remind us, like, what do those actually mean?
Resubjectivation. It's about reclaiming your individual agency. your ability to think critically. So encouraging people to think for themselves, to question the narratives they're being fed.
So it's like, don't just blindly accept what you're told.
Exactly. And resymbolization is about creating new values and meaning systems that go beyond, you know, the shallow consumerism that dominates so much of our lives.
So finding like meaning in something other than just buying things.
Yeah, exactly. Like what really matters.
Okay. I mean, that sounds great, but in a world that's constantly telling you to buy more, consume more, it's hard to imagine how we actually get there.
It is hard. But Dufour believes that a key part of the shift has to happen in education.
Oh, got it.
Like he actually calls for a revival of classical education, focusing on developing well-rounded individuals with strong critical thinking skills.
So it's kind of going back to the basics.
In a way, yeah. but it's not just about individual change.
Okay.
He also emphasizes the importance of rebuilding community, fostering a sense of shared responsibility.
So it's like an antidote to that hyper-individualism.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And these ideas, they're resonating with a lot of people, you know, who are feeling disillusioned with the way things are. And they're looking for, you know, a way to create a more just and equitable and sustainable future.
Yeah. I mean, it's an inspiring vision. It's just, it feels very challenging.
It is challenging, but I mean, that's kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy.
Okay, so we've laid out the problem. We've explored the history. We've even touched on some solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But where do we go from here? What does this mean for us as individuals?
Well, that's a question we'll continue to explore in the next part of our deep dive. But for now, I'll leave you with something to think about.
Okay.
You know, if we accept that this current system, with its emphasis on self-interest and competition, is leading to some pretty troubling outcomes, what responsibility do we each have to challenge it, to imagine something better?
That is a lot to think about.
Welcome back.
You're still with us, diving deep into this whole self-interest thing.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Last time, we were talking about how this screw your neighbor idea.
A Dufour's term?
Yeah, Dufour's term, exactly. How that's becoming more and more, I don't know, out in the open.
Yeah, more
overt. And how it connects to all these other things. We talked about social media, neoliberalism, even a
social Darwinism.
Social Darwinism. Heavy stuff.
It really is.
And we started to touch on some of the consequences. Rising inequality, social unrest.
And we haven't even fully explored the environmental crisis yet.
Yeah, that's true. That feels like...
The elephant in the room?
Kind of, yeah. How can we talk about all this without talking about what it's doing to the planet?
Exactly. And this is where the whole thing about capitalism's drive for endless growth...
Always wanting more.
Right. It clashes with the reality that Earth's resources are limited.
Yeah, it's like we're on this treadmill that's going faster and faster.
And we can't get off.
Yeah. And all the while, the environment's paying the price, right?
Yeah. We're seeing it everywhere. Climate change, deforestation, pollution, resources getting depleted.
It's scary to think about, you know. Are we using up everything future generations will need?
It's a valid question.
I mean, that just doesn't seem sustainable.
It does make you wonder, can a system based on endless growth actually survive on a planet that doesn't have endless resources?
It seems kind of impossible.
And yet, here we are.
Still stuck on that treadmill.
Still running. You know, Dufour, he doesn't have a lot of faith in things like the Paris Climate Accord actually fixing this.
Really? Why not? I mean, isn't that a good thing?
Well, he's skeptical because he thinks the people who really benefit from this system... corporations, financial institutions, you name it, they're not going to change.
Because it would mean less profit for them.
Exactly. Even if it's the best thing for the planet.
So everyone knows the ship is sinking, but nobody wants to give up their spot on the lifeboat.
Yeah. It's a tough situation. And Dufour thinks that instead of dealing with the root problems,
overconsumption, stuff like that,
capitalism is probably going to try to find a technological solution.
Like a quick fix.
Yeah, like geoengineering.
Oh, you mean like putting giant mirrors in space? Spraying stuff into the atmosphere?
Exactly. Things that sound kind of sci-fi.
They do.
Yeah.
But I've heard people talking about this stuff seriously.
Yeah, which is Dufour's concern. He sees these technological fixes as just putting off the inevitable.
The problem's still there. It's just hidden.
It's a Band-Aid solution.
So what's the real solution then? Does Dufour offer anything?
He does. And it might sound familiar. Remember those big words we talked about earlier? Resubjectivation, resymbolization.
Brain-meltingly big.
He thinks those concepts are actually key to navigating all this, especially the environmental crisis.
But how can these abstract ideas, like, actually help with real problems?
Well, resubjectivation is about empowering people to question those narratives we've been talking about. Like that voice that says you always need more, you always have to buy more, consume more.
So being more aware of those messages and not just automatically following along.
Right. And then resymbolization. That's about finding new values, new meaning systems that aren't all about stuff.
So like maybe community becomes more important or taking care of the planet.
Shifting our priorities. And Dufour believes that if enough people start to do that, it can lead to real changes in behavior.
So what? Like people will start demanding sustainable products?
Yeah. Or living more simply. Building stronger local communities, rejecting that whole screw your neighbor mindset.
It's a big shift, though. Like a totally different way of thinking.
It is. It's huge. But not impossible.
And Dufour thinks this is the path to a better future.
He does. A more just, equitable, sustainable future.
I like how that sounds.
Mm.
But honestly, how do we get from here to there?
It's definitely not going to be easy. It's a long road. And it means changing how we think about a lot of things about ourselves, about our values, about what it means to be human in this crazy century.
It's almost like we need a total reset, right?
Kind of, yeah. A cultural revolution.
And Dufour thinks this revolution starts with individuals.
He does. It starts with each person recognizing their own power to make different choices.
So it's not about waiting for the government or big companies to change things.
It's about taking responsibility yourself. You, me, everyone listening, we can all be part of this change.
That's a really good point. It's easy to feel powerless in the face of all this, but we do have choices.
We absolutely do. And that's what resubjectivation and resymbolization are all about. Recognizing your own power to think differently, act differently, and create a different future.
Wow, that's a pretty powerful message. Okay, so we've talked about the ethics of self-interest, how it impacts inequality and the environment, the big challenges we're facing.
Some potential solutions. Big ones, for sure.
Yeah. But there's one more thing we need to touch on. Technology.
Oh, yes. Technology.
It's easy to think of technology as, you know, just a tool, something neutral.
Right. Something we can use for good or bad.
But is it really that simple?
That's the question, isn't it? It's a question a lot of smart people are asking these days, especially with AI becoming so powerful.
Artificial intelligence.
The thing that has the potential to change pretty much everything.
It's a little bit mind-blowing, but also kind of scary.
Because it brings up some huge ethical questions.
Like, will AI just make all these problems we've been talking about even worse?
It could, especially if we're not careful about how we develop it.
What do you mean?
Well, one of the big issues is that AI systems are often trained on data that reflects all the biases in our society.
Oh, so like, if the data is biased against certain groups of people, the AI will be too.
Exactly. And this is where that screw your neighbor mindset becomes even more dangerous.
Because we could end up with AI systems that are literally programmed to be selfish.
It's a real possibility, and it could have huge consequences.
It's a pretty terrifying thought, honestly. But we can prevent that, right? We have to be able to.
We can. It's not inevitable, but it means being really intentional about the values we build into our AI.
So it's not just about, like, the technical stuff.
It's about the ethics.
And this is where like resubjectivation and all that comes back in.
Exactly. It's about thinking critically about the future we want to create and making sure our technology reflects those values.
So basically we need to shape technology before it shapes us.
That's the challenge. And it's not an easy one.
Okay, wow. So we've covered a lot. The history, the philosophy, the impact on inequality, the environment, and now even artificial intelligence.
It's a lot to process.
But what does it all mean for our listeners? How do they take all this and actually, you know, do something with it?
That's what we'll explore in the final part of our deep dive, trying to make this all feel a little less overwhelming, a little more actionable.
Welcome back to, I guess, the final part of our deep dive. It's been a journey, right?
Yeah, lots to unpack.
Yeah, we've gone from self-interest to, I mean, inequality, the environmental crisis.
Right.
We even touched on AI.
Big topics.
Yeah, and I imagine some of our listeners might be feeling a little overwhelmed, like, okay, all these big problems, what can I, little old me, actually do about any of this?
Yeah, it's easy to feel that way, but Dufour, he actually argues that individual action, that's where the real potential for change lies.
Okay, so I like that. But where do we even begin?
Well, I think the first step is just becoming more aware of the choices you're making every day and how those choices might be feeding into these systems we've been talking about, even if you don't realize it.
Okay, can you give us like some concrete examples?
Sure. You know, are the companies you're supporting, are they ethical? Or, you know, even the information you're consuming. Are you questioning those narratives, or are you just kind of passively accepting them?
So it's about being more mindful, more intentional.
Yeah.
With all your choices, even the small ones.
Recognizing those moments where you're tempted to, you know, screw your neighbor, like we talked about. And just making a different choice.
A choice that considers other people and the planet.
Yeah. So I remember we talked about those big concepts, resubjectivation, resymbolization. How do those fit into all of this?
Well, resubjectivation, remember, it's about reclaiming that ability to think critically. Make your own judgments. Don't just take things at face value. You know, ask tough questions. Challenge the status quo. Don't just accept that this is the way things are.
Right. So be informed.
Be informed.
Have these difficult conversations.
Yeah. Engage. And then resymbolization. That's about creating those new values, those new meaning systems, you know, that prioritize well-being, community, sustainability over, you know, material possessions or status.
So basically figuring out what really matters.
Yeah. What actually makes for a good life. And I love this idea that, you know, even small acts like of resistance, kindness, courage, those can actually have a ripple effect.
Absolutely. Because if enough people start making different choices, demanding better from our leaders, our institutions, you know, working to build more ethical and sustainable systems, well, things can change.
It's not about waiting for someone else to save us.
Right. It's about being the change.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's like the one question you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the question is, what's one small step you can take today to move towards a more ethical, sustainable, fulfilling way of life?
Yeah.
You know, it could be something small, like just having a conversation with a friend about this stuff or supporting a cause you believe in.
Right.
Or maybe it's something bigger, like changing your consumption habits, speaking out against injustice.
The important thing is to start somewhere.
Yeah, take that first step.
The future is not something that just happens to us.
Right.
We create it. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and keep diving.